Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of FarmCon Podcast. I'm co-host Todd Leckler, along with Kevin Van Trump today. We got a full agenda, a lot of exciting things to talk about. Kevin, good morning. How you doing, sir?
Doing all right, buddy. Watching awesome. Watching the deep snow out here. How much do you guys get?
No, we got a heavy dusting. I can still see the wheat.
Oh, no shit.
It's melting, but it was colder than Dickens. So, you know, in line with what you were talking about on the winter kill stuff, I guess we'll find out because we are in dire need of stuff. But
we probably got 10 to 12 inches here, so yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Did the crew show up and get it moved from the driveway?
Oh, yeah.
You're probably in lockdown anyway, so.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Yeah, everybody did. Everybody's good, so yeah.
No, yeah, it was a killer one. Well, listen, brother, let's get started with corn, bean, and wheat, and we'll roll from there. A lot of good stuff today.
Yeah, you know, Todd, not a whole lot of change on our corn, beans, and wheat marketing. I still sit here and I'm still holding some short bearish corn positions. Like I said, I think we're sitting there with 2.2 billion bushel carry. I think most of the people inside the trade are using a 95 million acres, somewhere in that ballpark for next year's, corn planted acreage number. Net, I mean, that still puts you in the 15.5 to 16 billion bushel crop. When we're sitting on 2.2 billion in ending stocks and you're talking about a possible another 16 billion bushel crop because the USDA is going to start out probably around a 181 yields, maybe even higher. It's tough to be wildly bullish. I always say when we're in that, when you're over 2 billion bushel or probably over 1.8 billion bushel, I still say the market likes to trade in that 350, 450 range without fund influence. So, if you get the funds bullish, maybe you flex that up to 480 or $4.05. You get the funds bearish, so you probably flex that thing down, closer into that 350 range. So I'm sitting here holding some bearish positions. I think we could float back down, chop sideways to lower, to get down around $4 probably between now and planted. There's not much in the headlines. South America's probably got 5% of their second crop corn planted, maybe a little more. Weather looks darn cooperative at this point. That could obviously change, and obviously if that did, then we'd have us a nice little weather, maybe a little weather rally of some sort and get some short covering. But for the most part, I'm sitting here thinking we grind sideways to lower. Unless something dramatic happens in, like ethanol, even if we get the year-round D15, I think the market comes out, pops, goes, takes off to the upside a little bit. Maybe you push up into that 450 range on the front end, get the back end up a little higher, obviously. I'm not thinking that there'll be the headlines to follow to keep the bulls engaged and keep the bullish momentum moving higher. So, if you're looking to make some sales, I'm looking to make some more sales. If we do get a bullish announcement in either beans or corn, I'm going to be trying to price and sell a little more into it. I've really got my eye on that back into the corn market, that NOV 26. It just feels like, you get that back up above $11, somewhere in that 11, 1120 range. I think you got to try and take a little bit more risk off. Even though I want to be a longer term demand bull in the bean market. So I just saying that between now and U.S. weather, there's just not a lot in the headlines that are going to be able to sustain a ton of bullish upside momentum. So if you get that, we get that type of wild card, I think you got to be pricing into it. Same type of story in wheat. The fundamentals are sitting here bearish. Just like I'm saying, the fundamentals I feel like in corn and beans, you just oversupplied. You got bean global ending stocks are at record highs, and wheat now you hear we've just made massive additions to world ending stocks in the last 6 months just because of all the mostly cooperative weather. You got southern hemisphere producing record production combined with Argentina and Australia, and you sit and look at Russia. They prices have ticked a bit higher this last week. We're up to about 230 a ton, but you were at what 227, 228 the week before. So yes, I think some things have tightened up a little bit in Russia. I think there's some bad weather. You got some areas that are battling some extreme cold, like here in the U.S. What they say, 10 to 15% of soft red and hard red, your winter wheats may have been in harm's way with insufficient snow cover. So you may have some winter kill issues, but that's such a tough thing to trade this at this point in time. I would be hesitant to be biting on that. So I'm more of a buyer on the bigger breaks. Like I said, if they get corn or beans beat up, too bad. I probably would step in there. And same with wheat. I'm looking to price some wheat sub $5, either hard red or soft red. I like soft red, but we're still 20, 30 cents from there. But until, I mean, that, you know, like I said, it just feels like we're going to swash around here, Todd, sideways to lower until we get a U.S. Weather story of some sort or some type of widespread weather worry or maybe some geopolitical wild card, you know, that shifts these some of these funds out of their bearish positions and shifts them over to being more bullish. And that would give us that room to make those sales. So, and wheat, I'm targeting, you know, Feb, March, April is our time frame. Maybe we can get something, catch a weather story and geopolitical wild card all at once and give us a little short covering and pop to the upside. And that's when we'll be pricing. But overall, you know, not a lot has changed. Fundamentally, you know, we're pretty oversupplied to sustain a big bull rally of with substantial upside momentum for an extended period, at least in my perspective. So, I think that's why it's like I always say, you know, when the ducks are in the air, you got to shoot. So we get those pops. I think you got to be pricing some bushels and taking some risk off the table.
Well, I may show my ignorance now, but from history's perspective, I mean, in your years of trading, I mean, with this massive global supply we got, and I mean, yields aren't going to go down. I mean, production ain't going to go down outside of, you know, the normal weather stuff. I mean, is how serious are things? Are you thinking from long term? Price is being kept.
Well, no, I think it's just like it always is. I mean, to me, it's no different when I was trading in the 90s. I mean, I think you go, it's actually better, I mean, in my opinion, because I think the cycles are a lot shorter. You know, my good friend Andy Daniels, he will argue the same thing, and a lot of the great traders that I've met through the years will kind of argue the same. Just mean in farming, in agriculture cycle, you're going to have those, you know, you're going to have those sustained periods where we're sitting here battling, or, you know, just below the cost of production to try and weed out some acres, and you know that can run, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and then you're going to get a couple of years in there where you get some big old, just some massive runs higher, and you know you're really going to ring the bell. And like we've always argued, you know, it's how you play all of that, what you do with your money on the really good years, and how you invest it, and you know, how you keep from getting just your face ripped off in the really bad years. And that's what you got to try to do. So you got to know out of the 10 years, there's going to be 5 or 6 that are, it's going to be tough, and maybe even a little bit more. So, but those cycles are shortened up is what I'm trying to say, Todd. This isn't like, you know, you go all the way back in history. I mean, you had some extended periods of really, really tough, long, you know, decade long cycles of below the cost of production. So you get back in those pick years, you get back in a lot of those. I mean, it's we definitely traded corn below the cost of production more than we did above. That's for darn sure. So nothing any different than before.
Very good. Appreciate that. Hey, so we got a Fed meeting starting today. Announcements tomorrow. I know everyone's not looking for cuts in that, but any potential surprises in the comments that they'll make looking forward. And then also touch on what your thoughts are, if any, on looks like Rick Ryder from BlackRock's chief investment officer for global fixed income may be our next Fed chair, and what that may mean.
I like Rick Ryder. Rick, I've met him a couple of times. We were at some different conferences, but no, I mean, he seems like a great guy. I couldn't imagine too much better than him and the set up there. Both big bond guys, both big traders in the past. So, you know, the market would love Ryder. I don't think, I don't know if he'll get it or not. I mean, I'm probably still banking on Kevin Warsh, but I think the market's fine with that too. I think the market would be the most probably happy with Rick Ryder, but I, you know, again, I don't think it's going to matter. They're all very, very well qualified. Every person he's had up there, I respect the hell out of most all of them. So, I mean, I do. So, and they've all, you know, shit, they've forgotten more than I know about the bond markets and just the fixed income and the other, the other things that you would need to be a great Fed chair. So, like I said, I think all 4 or 5, I could even go deeper with the list that he had. I respect all of them, and I was fine seeing any of them. So, like I said, I'm going to be happy either way. Most of the comments that we're hearing, though, is you're probably not going to get a rate cut until June, is what everyone's thinking. Powell's term ends in May. Maybe you get one in June. And it wasn't even because of Powell. It just, most people are just saying they probably don't get a rate cut until June, you know, till the back, till you get more of the mid cycle here. So I suspect I'm kind of on that camp too. Maybe you get one in June, maybe you get one towards the end of the year, and that's where you end up this year. So,
well, yeah, it sounds like, and I don't know how serious Trump was about getting those rates way down there. And then, you know me, I'm always thinking that's going to, what that might do to inflation and stuff, but I guess time will tell. So we'll see.
Well, what do you want to do? Dive into gold and silver on me now?
No, I'm going to save that. I want to get to the next hot topic. We're days away from potential government shutdown with all the pieces in play there. It may literally happen with what's going on in Minnesota and stuff. But what's you hear, see anything, or thoughts, or just thoughts on that? And then if you have any comments on what's happening in society like the Minnesota left.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think the government will shut down, but I mean, if they do, I mean, it is what it is. You know, I'm sitting there on both, you know, I guess I can talk both sides of it. I think the country voted, they wanted to crack down on illegal immigration. I think most everybody I talked to on both sides of the aisle, to me, at least friends, I don't know particularly in Washington, but just common folks here in the United States, I think everyone is for legal immigration. We all know we need immigrants. We all know the country is built on immigration. But it seems to me like everyone is wanting legal immigration. I had a good friend, like I told you, killed by an illegal immigrant that shouldn't have been in the country. And that was the first time that it impacted my life. So it was definitely, you know, interesting. The guy, you know, been kicked out two or three times, had a big rap sheet, and it was unfortunate. I mean, beyond unfortunate. So, you know, I think you got to, I still sit here and believe we got to follow the law. I mean, and I'm for legal immigration, and that's all there is to it. The situation in Minneapolis, like I've said before, I respect the hell out of the police, and I know, my family, we definitely support the police, and we need the police. I'd be honest, I don't know if I'd be a very good cop or a very good ICE person. I mean, I don't know if I could take people spitting in my face or, you know, all the shit that they do. And I don't know. I don't know if I could, you know, when we played sports and everything, you know, you tried not to get rabbit ears. I was a coach, always said, you know, you didn't want to listen to the fans, didn't want to listen to other people, and you tried to stay focused. But, you know, I don't know, day to day, I just don't know if we have the right people in place in a lot of those cases. And I don't know if the proper training, I don't know if the proper mentality. I've seen a few of Jordan's buddies become cops, and a couple of them, like I said, I knew, like, man, that guy's going to be a shitty cop. And a couple of them I knew, like, boy, that guy's going to be a great cop. And it was just the demeanor, you know? I mean, just,
right,
you know, just the demeanor, just going in there hot, you know? And I my grandma always said, and I said this years ago when the George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter, my grandma always said, you know, police officers used to be and should still be a beacon of hope, meaning of this. And not necessarily hope, but I don't know the proper words. But my grandma always said, listen, police officers should come in and knowing that they're about to embark on a situation that is going to dramatically change both parties' lives. So let's say a person killed somebody or raped somebody. Well, you're going to catch the person that did the raping. Well, you're going to dramatically change their life. And the person that you just embarked on that got raped, their life's dramatically changed. So the police officer has to come in as like a beacon of hope or peace. And like, because this shit's going crazy already. I mean, you don't come in as an escalator. And that's what I'm saying. I don't think I could do the job. And I worry that, boy, it is so tough these days with everybody having the cell phones to keep your calm, keep your composure. Shit, the guy's got a loaded weapon, two rounds. I don't know. I sure in hell don't want my kid in that situation, or me, or anybody that I love. That's a very, very tough job. And like I said, I'm not the guy to be judging anyone. It's definitely unfortunate that people are getting shot. I just, for the life of me, I can't understand going out there, knowing what's happening, knowing how dangerous some of this can be. I don't know. I just can't get my head around impeding the progress of the police or ICE. But at the same time, I can't get my head around the guy shooting the guy like six times. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah,
it just seems crazy. Or the lady in the van. Like I said, I mean, yes, I see this. It, you know, It's like our own military. How many of our own military lives are lost from friendly fire or something goofy happening or somebody losing their mind and going rogue? So, you know, like I said, it's unfortunate on both sides. I just wish the police, the ICE, I mean, I wish everybody calmer heads could prevail, but I just don't know if you can get enough of those great people. I know there's some great police officers. I know there's great, you know, people first on the scene, and that's awesome. But I also know there's probably some bad ones too. So, like I said, I see both sides of the argument and the debate. I don't know if you're going to find a real somewhere in the middle. I guess probably lies the truth, right? Like everything.
Well, it does. But
it's your story, the other people's story, and somewhere in the middle maybe is probably about even ground. And
one of the reasons
I hate to see a whole damn, I hate to see a whole goddamn city like Minneapolis burned to the ground or anything like that. So I suspect something needs to come of it. I don't know how ICE does their job to get the illegals rounded up and out if they're constantly, you know, being crowded and harassed. I like I said, I don't know the answer to that. It's an unfortunate event.
Well, I just thought, you know, now it ties into why the government may shut down if the Democrats who are saying they're not going to pass the funding bill because it's got, you know, funding for DHS and stuff, which...
Well, I think that's a lot of emotional decision-making, right? And again, I suspect, just like I said with the police officers, I think you got to try and get the emotion out of it, and you got to do what's right for the country and what's right for everyone. And
yeah,
that's what's so difficult here, because you got emotions on both sides of the table that are really taking over a little bit, and that can't happen. And hopefully they'll get it worked out and figured out, but it sure is sad to see, you know, that it has to play out the way it's playing out right now.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, we got a big week of earnings coming up, and you share some thoughts and obviously morning's report and what you own and stuff, but any, just add a little color, expectations, what you might see expecting on bounces after reports, et cetera, on your big tech week?
Well, not really. I mean, I don't know how it's going to play out. I've been, you know, I've trimmed some profits, taken profits on the rallies, sitting in a little more cash and probably a knucklehead for doing that. But, you know, I added a little, I picked up a few stocks today, just kind of as a trade, or I should say yesterday and this morning. Taiwan Semi, I added a little bit to it. I bought Service Titan. I bought ServiceNow. Added a little bit to Boeing on the break. I bought Toast and Alley Financial. Just a few things that have been beaten up. Boeing hasn't been beaten up, or neither has Taiwan Semi. But those other stocks, a couple of things that have been beaten up. Good companies, just probably thrown out, baby with the bathwater, so to speak. But that's really all I'm out there doing, just kind of dabbling, just nothing. I'm not really, don't have any real big positions on in anything. Like I said, the volatility is a little bit worrisome. I'd sold some calls, like I told you the last time around, still sitting in those in profit. I've been short the dollar. That's been a great trade. Long some gold. That's been good. You know, but really not doing a whole lot, Todd. A lot of sitting. And that's where the money's made, you know, sitting and.
Yes, I'm learning that. Let me ask you this.
We're not doing a lot there. Yeah.
In regards to AI, I mean, it's becoming becoming complacent, I think, on just hearing too much about this AI and the build up, blah, blah, blah. But I'm just going to ask the question this way. You know, given all the data centers running into some real bottlenecks, you know, with the memory supply and the power, and that CapEx continues to eat a huge share of all that cash flow, I mean, how much longer do you think, how many more quarters of reporting do you think the market's going to tolerate, spend now, profits later before it starts, you know, punishing the small disappointments from Mag 7? Or do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't. I mean,
how long can we keep doing?
You said the Mag 7. Hell, they're flush on cash like no tomorrow. I mean, I don't see who they're. I don't know. I mean, that's my whole point. I don't think they're massively in debt.
From a stock price position, are people going to start saying, dude, this. We'll run out of patience because
Well, I mean, there's a ton of arguments and theories on that. I think the Shiller index was at like 40, and the only time it's been at that's been right when we've crashed it. But there's a lot of argument that number is old school number, and you know, yeah. I hate to say it's different this time because that's never the case. But there's a lot of talk that, I mean, you know, earnings power is substantially greater than it was in the past. I mean, substantially, and so. you know, these companies are clipping a much, much larger profit margin. That's why it's so hard to use, look in the rearview mirror and try to forecast where you're going out of the front windshield. And it's almost silly to try and play that game. Because back in the day, I mean, you go back when Exxon was the leader of the SP, you know, we had Exxon and IBM and those kind of, well, shit, their profit margins was nothing compared to these companies now, nothing. So you're going to sit and say, oh, well, we're overvalued from a PE ratio. Well, shit, when haven't these companies been overvalued from a PE ratio standpoint? So it's like, if you want to use old school metrics, sure. And if you want to use new ones, sure. Like I said, I don't think there's any magic wand here or crystal ball to tell you how to forecast this. So, we're going to trade at 22, 23X right now. Forward guidance, you get up here to 24, it'll be damn near the all-time highs that you traded without seeing some type of historical pullback. But I don't think that those numbers matter anymore. Like I said, there's too many young kids in the market these days, Todd. I mean, there's too many young people in the market. Let's put it this way. Not young people. You got way more people in the markets that are able to invest from their phone, from the comfort of their car, from hell. I see people sitting in the airports trading. I see everywhere I go, people are in the markets, trading, talking about the markets. Well, that was never the case. I mean, through all your historical data, that was never the case. So I don't, I'm not one to say we're real frothy here or crazily overvalued for what it is. So no,
that makes sense. That's a good thing.
Yeah, do I think we could see a 10 or 15% pullback this year? For sure. Maybe a 20? Hell, I don't know. I mean, a 10% pullback happens almost every single year, just about every 13, 14 months. If you average it all out, you get somewhere around a 10% pullback. So I'm sitting here just I'm raising some cash and a little more cash just to add to my favorite long-term positions, the positions that I want to build for the kids. That's all. And then I'll just, you know, when they break hard or shake back out, I'll look to add a little. So, you know, that's really all I'm doing right now. So just to be honest.
A stupid, insightful question for me. So on your long-term holdings, and we said that, you know, they're going to break 10, 15% every year potentially.
No, I don't know about 15, but you typically, and maybe not your exact holdings. I'm talking the S&P as a whole.
Okay. Well, my question then, and I'm trying to work this into my new, you know me, I'm still learning. I know you're buying the breaks, but you ever tried to sell before breaks? I mean, that even makes sense.
What do you mean by that?
Well, saving the money, you're buying the breaks, adding to your position stuff, I assume. So do you ever try and, I guess it'd be guessing the market.
I've just said I was making profits and taking money off.
So, all right. So that's on your S&P and even on individual stock. So you'll do that.
Oh no, individual. Yeah. No, mostly individuals. I don't really touch my SPYs. Okay. Those just sit and go to sleep on. But no, most all of my, I've trimmed. Lots of them I've trimmed as of late because we were close to all time high. I trimmed Live Nation yesterday. I've trimmed TKO. I've trimmed several just to trim back, just because you're pressing all-time highs and making new all-time highs. In my theory, NVIDIA, you'd see pullback damn near 30, 40% in any given year. I mean, that thing will have some extreme pullback. So it's like, there's no reason to chase it higher, in my opinion. I don't think it's just a runaway freight train. I mean,
right.
I think you get pullbacks, and those are the times you need to add. And then when you get a big, you kind of try to get in rhythm a little bit, I guess.
I'm learning. I like that. And we'll talk about more of that later on a point. So let's talk about the dollar, man. It's making some news. It's getting crushed and stuff. And what is that going to, are they going to help our exports at all? And then
you would sure like to believe a weaker dollar is typically bullish commodities, but maybe in some of these grains, we're so oversupplied, it really doesn't matter. And,
right.
I don't know. I mean, you would have thought that this, continued weakness in the dollar would have provided more of a tailwind to corn and wheat and a little bit to beans, but that really just hasn't come to fruition, so to speak. I mean, maybe that is helping to keep it from breaking lower and providing some stability underneath, but I'm not sure. And you look at the dollar as far as the stock market is concerned, I mean, there's some winners and losers. It depends on how much overseas exposure that you have and do have, and you know, and those types of things. So there's some plays to be made there. I think some people are upping their exposure to international stocks, which I don't really typically ever do. And I know that there's a lot of, you know, investment banks that are kind of recommending that these days. So makes sense. But we're definitely seeing a weakness of the dollar here, which is, you know, which we knew that, you know, we knew that going in. So,
well, and you and I talked yesterday on the global stocks or whatever a little bit, and you told me what you just mentioned, but tell the people why. I mean, why you don't play international. I mean, it's a simple answer, but why you don't generally get out there in the international global market?
Well, I don't personally, just because I don't know enough about it. And what I did, you know, here's how it used to go when I was younger. So here's some guy that I thought knew a lot. Tell me, well, you know, hell, boy, you should be investing in this or that. And he'd give a good reason, and then I'd go do it. And then that guy's gone. And you know, you're left to navigate the position all on your own. And, well, shit, the easiest part of any position is getting in it. I mean, that's nothing. A knucklehead can do that. I mean, anybody can do that. It's how you manage the position that's going to make or break you. I mean, where do you add? Where do you get out? You know, where do you double down? Where do you take the profit? I mean, that's what it's all about. So, you know, I just made it a rule. I mean, I just don't follow people into positions or investments or anything anymore unless I personally know every single aspect of what I want to know. Where's the exit signs? Where's the place where I can at? Where's the place I can make pit stop? Where's how long before my troops come back to me? How much more troops is it going to take? You know, and I've got to really want to do it. And so I just don't listen to the stories anymore, and I just don't do any of that. Like I said to you the other day, it's like kind of sports gambling, right? Like, I don't mind listening to Jimmy the Greek back in the, you know, all these other people that want to tell you what their bets and picks are, which is fine. I don't mind listening to them, and maybe something they say sparks some interest or provides me a little intel that I didn't kind of know. But I'm going to ultimately make my own decision. I'm ultimately going to have all my own pieces, and that's how it's going to go. So on the international front, I've just never been that good internationally, and I never felt like I had an edge myself. You know, I was always following somebody, and that's just no way to make any money. And it never I've never seen anyone do it. I don't know how that game works out really well for people. So, like I said, I just cross it off the list for the most part and try to stick with the things that I have a better edge in.
No, that makes sense. I don't think enough people think about. I know after one, you think the entry point's everything. You think getting in, and dude, that's so minuscule in the whole playout thing. Which I appreciate your comments on all the things you got to be thinking about. I guess
yeah,
no
Andy, we used to have a running joke. You know, we'd say that pick any. You just spin a wheel and pick a market and put a trade on, and then
right,
that's your trade. And then I spin a wheel and pick a market, and put my trade. Okay, now it's how we manage that trade from there is what's going to decide who's the best trader. And that really is the truth, and that's what you really have to do, you know, and that's what it's kind of all about. So entries, you know, whatever. I mean.
All right, so then at that point, you know, when you and I beat this around all the time, and you beat me up with it all the time. Okay, so you've done that. You spun the wheel. You picked your thing. Now what source of information, what process are you using to manage that trade? Fundamental, technical, just figuring out money flow? I mean, what's your
– for me, it's probably 80-90% fundamental.
Okay.
Probably not really any technical. If I'm using technicals, it's really to fine tune an entry point or to fine tune an exit or to just like a flag out there. You know, it's like you're just shooting for something and it's like, yeah, that's a good enough number and that's based on some technical, you know, but like I said to you, that used to be a huge technical. I mean, I was eating up with the technical side of the markets, and boy, I really thought that, you know, could find the holy grail, and you could discover lots of great insight into trading. But each time it was always, you know, the same story. You'd win a little until you didn't, and then it'd wipe you out. And a lot of times I felt like the technicals, if you were too bought into them, they'd get you killed. Sometimes absolutely get you killed because you would be a believer and you wouldn't be a believer of what the market was actually doing. You're a believer in the technicals, and you just kept thinking this is going to come back. You'd add more in, and shit, next thing you were done, you were broke. And I've experienced that a few times. So, like I said, my theory is this. The technicals are a snapshot of the river at any given moment. And the river can be as long as you want it to be. It can be from here back to 1900. It can be from here back to 2022. And that's the length of the river. So you're taking a snapshot of the river. And every ripple and pebble and every movement of that river over that period of time. And then you come in and you can customize and optimize your technicals to fit the flow of that river. And that optimization gives you a false sense of self-security. And because of this, because it is just a snapshot of the river at that time looking out of the rearview mirror. But you and I both know that river will never be the same from that point forward. It'll always be different. You'll have different things in the river, different rocks falling in the river, different rain, erosion. The river is never going to be the same moving forward. Yes, your technicals will look for similarities, but not the same. That's what I tried to say. If people came out and said corn was poisonous tomorrow and it poisoned everything, they just had all these studies. Well, your technicals wouldn't be worth a shit because game over. And there's no – the river has never looked like that in the past is what I'm trying to say. So you got to be careful with technicals, in my opinion. And, you know, I would say a big majority of how some of the best traders I've ever met, it's really just their subconscious and how they go about, you know, executing just from their own intel, their own gut. And a lot of that's the case. So, like I said, I blend more fundamentals. I use technicals to some degree. And, you know, and that's really how I go about it.
Well, I've always your river or stream analogy has always been good, made a lot of sense to me, and it really helps on the flow of things as you get into these markets and understand them stuff. So, good stuff there. Now, we talked silver and gold the other day, and you had some definitive thoughts on those two markets in regard to, you know, what you should be in if you're going to be in something.
Yeah, I would suggest 100% do not follow me in the silver market. I say that seriously. You know, I probably sold out, like I said, I think I blended out. I've probably sold I've sold over half my cash silver, probably at like $65 cash sale, which, shit, I was so happy and thrilled until I looked up and saw it at 110 the other day. But, you know, I sit here and I'm like, I still got quite a bit left. And, you know, I'm looking to try and sell a little more this week. We pop back up there and get up to 120 or 130. I may try and sell a little bit more cash. I'm just telling you guys, and everybody can tell me I'm nuts on that. I mean, it's getting tougher and tougher to sell this cash. I was talking to some folks on the phone this week, in two different locations across the country, and they were quite a ways apart. They couldn't find anyone in their areas that were buying more than 50 ounces at a time. Now, you know, I'm not saying, I mean, maybe people aren't selling that much at a time, but, you know, I think that if you got any quantity at all, and it's tough to move. I'm just telling you, and the bid and offers are certainly getting wider, and but that's okay if prices are going to continue to rally. I think Andy sent me something yesterday from there was big silver gold bugs, but, you know, they were talking silver close to $500 somewhere up in there, and, you know, like fish stories now. Everybody's trying to outdo the next on how high it can go. And, you know, I feel like it's just turned into a meme stock to some degree. I think you've got a lot of those traders chasing the momentum. And, you know, I think that's where you're at with silver. Like I said to you, Todd, I'm more of a gold bull than I am a silver. And I used to be a huge silver bull. The only reason I say it is because a lot of silver's demand is from industrial type of usage. And, you know, let's be quite honest, I don't think for one second that they won't find alternative sources to some degree for a lot of these. If the silver price just continued to go and go and go, like I said, I mean, you're gonna find manufacturers changing and shifting gears to find some alternatives. And, you know, I think you've seen that way. You've seen that with dentists through the years. You know, very few dentists are using silver anymore to fill teeth. And so I think you start to find alternatives, just like we always feel in the corn market. You know what I'm saying? Corn prices get real high, you start feeding wheat. You know, if the wheat stays cheaper, you get meal prices out of sight, you'll start to looking for alternatives. So, you know, I think, you know, that's where we're at. I I like gold longer term. Like I said, I'd probably be a buyer of some more gold on some breaks. I didn't win. I was bidding on some of that old gold we talked about last time from the 1860s, 1870s, 80s out in the California gold mines. But damn, that stuff still went for crazy premium compared to just the raw ounce. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I'm with you. I fortunately get out of all that. So I think we got to have a pullback, dude. I mean, right? These things, I mean, at some point, and like you always told me, you know, hey, you get 30% profit or something. Take your damn profit and move out for now, whatever. But
yeah, I did. You know, like I said, I sold some of the silver, took some of that money, bought a couple of Michael Jordan rookies this last week.
Right.
86 Fleer rookies. I bought some nines that I think may have a chance for a 10 one day when AI grading kind of takes over. But you know me, I buy Charizard Pokemon cards. I buy Michael Jordan rookies. I buy Jackie Robinson. Those are about the only three cards I'm buying much of anymore. So that's kind of where we're at.
That makes it fun.
And too. I've been buying some Bowies. Like I said, I've been buying some Randall Bowie knives, a few other old Bowie knives from early Indian years and things like that. So. Yeah.
I'm just curious, Kevin, what does a Bowie knife with a story from 150 years ago go for?
Well, I mean, it just depends. I don't have any. I'm just kind of getting into it. To be
honest, but give me an idea.
I've got some Bowie knives that range in price from about, I'd say you can pick some up. You know, hey, you can pick up some for a couple hundred bucks. But there's just so many fakes out there. You got to be real careful on that.
Right.
On that side of it, so you got to know what you're doing. You got to know some people, but I've got a few knives that are worth maybe $8-10 grand a piece.
No fooling.
And they're really, really cool. I mean, they're just awesome with great, you know, great letters and
right.
You know, some things with them. And then you can pick up most of the Randalls will go anywhere from, you know, 500 to 2,000, somewhere in that range. It's just a great knife, a great history. That was kind of World War II. Vietnam, and then, you know, you start getting into some more decorative stuff that they have. But again, just kind of fun stuff to piddle with the kids, the grandkids, and
but,
you know, things to maybe leave them one day and stuff like that. But, you know, that's kind of what I have fun with. And hell, I sit here, Todd, and I used to be a big, you know, just had a lot of cash, you know, and would have a lot of cash in the bank or the vault or you know, safe cut. But boy, I'm telling you, as you get older and you watch that cash just erode.
Oh, it's crazy.
It pisses me off to no end. That's where I'm like, I loved buoys back, you know, 20 years ago, but I'm like, oh, I've got to put the cash. Just have this cash because I'm going to need this cat. Well, shit, I've been better off. Buy a piece of art, buy a baseball card, buy a buoy knife, buy a, I don't know, but it's like, it's sure enough shit beat my cash just sitting there dwindling. So.
What? No, dude, and that's what I look back and think about, Kevin. After, I mean, what I've learned working with you and just been aware of, I mean, no one told me this, and I wasn't certainly looking for the answers, but how much inflation just freaking eats away and where you need to put your money and building wealth. So, all
yeah,
these
you know, I heard Ron Barron talk the other day, and I started thinking about it. I'm like, God damn, he might be kind of right there. You know, it says, you know, prices tend to double about every 10, 12, 15 years, somewhere in there. And I look back on my life, and I'm like, you know, I think he's kind of right. That's probably about right. And you and I are always talking, and all my buddies, and we've all gotten old, right? And we're all talking about this inflation, and it's an ass kicker and all that. But I had talked to the kids. Well, shit, they don't know it's any. They don't know anything. They ain't talking about it. And that's why I wonder, like, you know, we've gone through so many cycles of doubling, and now we're out here towards the finish line. And it's like we've gone through so many cycles of doubling that we look back now, and we're like, holy shit, prices are high on everything. You know, that's how I feel when I go to the grocery. I go anyway.
Well,
God damn, I'm not paying that. I'm not gonna pay those people that kind of money for that. You know, Michelle pensions me and like, why are you being like? I'm like, there's no way I'm paying those guys. And like, hey Todd, my favorite is when a lot of these laborers come. You know, like we'll have somebody come out to do. I think a guy came out that wanted to cut a Michelle had a guy come out. She's putting a new stove in. This guy had to cut a gas pipe, and this son of a bitch wanted to charge us like $500. And I said, well, and Michelle was going to sign this. I said, what are you doing, man? And she says, well, the guy charged an extra $500, cut this. I said, no. I'm like, here, let me show you how this works. I mean, no. We'll cut the gas pipe. We'll cap it off. It's fine. It's no big deal. I mean, you know, I used to do that shit all the time with my dad and everything, my grandpa on the farm. You know, it's just, but it's crazy how much plumbers, electricians, and just the trades are charging. And that probably doesn't stop, does it? I think
no, and And keep in mind,
you can't do shit at all for themselves. So, I mean, of course,
well, that's it. Bingo,
more power to them. More power to them.
You know, they ran into you, but there ain't very many yous or me's out there that can do some of these things that can save them. They're just, you know, they're going to pay that money. So
no, but just everything across the board, like you and I are always talking about the prices. But
the
thing is, because we are old now. I remember my grandparents doing the same. I remember my pops being like, "Are you shitting me for an ice cream cone, for a movie ticket?" You know, everything we did, gasoline, you know, it didn't matter. He was always bitching about how much the price was going up, you know.
But that doesn't change the fact of, you know, what, you know, nominal inflation, real inflation, what your dollar can actually buy. I mean, yes, you're right. We've lived long enough to see these things, and everyone will, because that's the way it goes. But it's like, still, we've lost purchasing. I mean, if you're not investing correctly, you're losing purchasing power, bottom line.
Well, yeah, and I'm with you. I didn't know any of that when I was young. My folks didn't teach me that. They didn't know anything themselves. And, you know, we didn't know those things, so.
Yeah,
definitely a decided advantage for the people that have the intel on that type of thing. So,
well, no, and I remember a guy when I was at Blue Hills. You know, a guy said to me, he was a real estate dude. Matter of fact, we rented from him when I moved back to town from Lincoln, and he made a comment to me in passing one time, right over my head, talking about building wealth, you know, generational wealth, and how you go about it and buying stuff. I mean, my stupid simple mind is like, well, yeah, what do you mean? I can't buy a thing. I don't have any money to buy anything, you know, assets. I'm out there. I'm out there spending every paycheck. What do you mean buy something?
No, so, and that's a mentality shift right there. I go through that with my daughter and wife all the time, and I'm not lying to you guys. And I'm not trying to say anything. This isn't women-related or anything. But Jordan and I spend the majority of our time thinking about how we're going to make money. Well, my wife and my daughter spend the majority of their time thinking about how they're going to spend their money. And it's a big mindset. That's a big mindset shift. You know, when we were younger, Todd, shit, that's all I thought about was how I was going to spend my money.
Right.
You know, getting to the weekend, what we're going to do next, where am I, oh man, look, I just got a little bit of money. Where am I going to go spend?
No.
That's all I'd think about, you know, or betting on a game or doing something retarded. But I certainly wasn't thinking about, I was thinking about ways, but I'm telling you, I was thinking about more about spending than I was making, I think. And that's totally reversed. Now I sit there in my head and I'm like, do I want to buy that? Or should I just take that and put, I'd like to just buy a few more shares of that company. You know, I think more about everything I purchase anymore. It's almost like it's an investment in my head. And maybe that's a little bit of a sickness.
Yeah,
you
told me that. And that's how I like it. Just, I mean, and hey man, message to a lot of growers is simply, you know, you gotta be on those good years you talk about too. Did you gotta be investing in asset producing income producing assets and not, you know,
try to, yeah.
Yeah, as best you can, of course. All right, well, let's move on as we get near the end here. I always like to, you know, throw in some stuff here for the perspective aspect and stuff. You wrote a little essay the other day on Great Minds for the advice for the kids and grandkids regarding, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything. And I remember my first week on the job when I had to drive you somewhere and you saw my car. And that comment came up.
I wouldn't have hired you back in the day. I mean, but
no, I get that. And I thought about this the other day, Kevin, because I'm thinking to myself, at the level that you operate at when you were in Chicago and you were dealing with that, dude, I get it. Or if you want to be successful, I get it. But I remember, and it's maybe wrong, but I remember thinking, you know, I can be successful doing my golf pro thing without having to have a clean car. But I'm in line with what you're saying. Just go and just share a little bit about it and, you know, how you've seen it play out for the success.
Well, yeah, I mean, we, you know, when we had some of the firms in Chicago, they'd have you trick people, you know, like, hey, you'd bring them in for second or third inning. Hey, let's go to lunch, and then you'd be like, ah, shit, my car's getting worked on. They came down and picked it up today. So, you know, we're downtown and everything's paying out. So we'd be like, hey, you go grab your car real quick, and I'll pay the parking and stuff, and you drive. Oh, and you could see their faces. Boy, they'd shit their pants.
Yeah.
But when the car pulled up, man, if you'd get in a car and that thing was just in shambles, you know, and just shit everywhere, you wouldn't hire them because you'd just be like, there's no way. I mean, and how you do anything is how you do everything. My grandpa used to tell me that at the farm all the time. And that really stemmed from maybe forgetting to close the gate, you know, and then we're jacking with cows out, or maybe I'd forget to break ice out at one of the stations, or maybe I'd forget to put some hay out in one of the fields, but I did all the other fields, but I missed one or something, you know. And boy, I'm telling you, you had to do the shit perfect, you know, because still, things were at stake. Animals were at stake. The operation was at stake. So, you know, it just became, I heard that so much in my life, I wanted to puke. And it was with everything. How I wore my hat, how my belt was, how my shoes were tied. You know, it didn't matter. How you do anything, how you do everything. And that's all I ever heard. And so it always made sense to me. And the other part that really made sense to me, and I just had this talk yesterday with Michelle. We were talking about she's more of a procrastinator on things, and she never had that beaten into her head like I did. But I said to her, babe, and she handles the accounting and the books and some of our stuff, and then we hand it off to CBiz and these other big accounting firms. But I said, you better just do it right then and there. So I was busy. You know, I'm busy. Well, my grandpa always said this. This made a lot of sense to me. Do you plan on being more successful as you get older or less successful? And I was always like, well, more successful. And he says, well, certainly. And he's like, well, then you're not going to get less busy. You're going to get busier. So if you don't have the time to do it right now, how are you going to have the time to do it right 2 weeks from now or 2 months from now or 2 years from now? You're not. So just stop, do it right now, and then you don't have to worry about it. And that was always kind of another just, you know, how you do anything is how you do everything type of line. And, you know, and that was just always kind of always stuck with us and never walked past work. I mean, I'd get blown up so many times on the farm just – when I was little, you know, maybe 8 to 12 years old, just being like, well, I didn't think that was my job, Pops. I thought that was so-and-so. You know, I thought he was supposed to be doing that. Oh, shit. Yeah. He'd lose it on that. You know, he's like, well, who cares? You walk past it. It wasn't done. Fix it and do it right. And I'm like, God damn, I think he's right. So now I can't really walk past much if I see something without them doing it. And then that gets people pissed off. But anyway, I mean, I think that is something you got to try to really – drive home to the kids, and you know that'll be something I'm working on with the grandkids for sure, and they ain't gonna like it, but they're gonna get a dose of it.
And I think one of the sad things is no one's spending the time with kids and grandkids today to do that, man. I mean, everybody, I mean, you look at all those things that we see out there about grandparents and how they're living their lives now. I mean, dude, they ain't passing on kind of information your grandpa passed on better.
No, I hear you. I mean,
it's nuts.
But parenting and grandparenting, it is not easy if you're gonna do it right. Again, if you're going to do it right, it's definitely hard work. And, you know, all those out there who are trying to really build some good kids and some great kids, you know, I think that's important. That's another thing, you know, that's I go on a deep dive on that, like there's no tomorrow, but that's where I also struggle, like, with all these people that don't want to have kids or any kids. And boy, that shit just gets in my dome. And I feel like, I feel like they should be taxed at some crazy, crazy high rate because I'm not having kids. Because I'm like, I'm over here, spent my whole life, like, corralling these little knuckleheads. And, you know, it ain't easy. When they were grounded, we were grounded. When they, you know, it was just that way in life. And, you know, it was tough raising kids. And we didn't have money, and we did everything for them. But it's like we're putting productive kids back into the system that are going to pay a lot of taxes and earn money and be good citizens. Well, you know, it's like the people that aren't doing that, in my opinion, they should be taxed way higher, I think. But, you know, that's just my opinion. But
no, that's an interesting one for sure. I love it. Well, all good stuff there. I love it. That's what we love about those story threes. Hey, you said that you read some books this weekend, put the phone down, did some stuff. Anything interesting or new you want to share?
Trying this year to shut the computer. You know, Jordan told me about the shooting in Minnesota. And hell, I didn't even know what happened. I just, like I said, I see enough of it. I just shut it off, and I've been reading more and just reading more books. I just like it. I never used to read a ton. You know, I'd always speed read a lot and things like that. But I through the years, I think you get more out of it. So, yeah, no, we've been banging out some books. My good friend Jay Felton, one of our attorneys at Latham Gates, he gave me a book called Unreasonable Hospitality. You definitely should get it, Todd. It's a good book just because you understand that type of thing. It's written by big restaurateur up in New York, and you know, it's just a great book. It just talks about what people really, really have lost the art of hospitality and what needs that. And so, you know, why I read things like that is just because to be a better advisor, be a better board member on some of the businesses that we have or invested in or that we partake in. And, you know, I think it just helps in general, just a lot. So yeah. You know, his whole theory, a little bit different on a couple aspects, was, yes, hospitality to your guests or to your investors or your clients, that's a given. But his unreasonable hospitality is actually to his staff and his workers. And his argument was, if you provide them with crazy hospitality, it becomes almost like a, you know, some type of cycle where they then provide the guests and the clients and the investors with crazy, unreasonable hospitality. And it's kind of a different, thing that I'd read in the past. And, you know, there's some great, great stories in there and how they'd go above and beyond for the clients and their people. So, you know, I think anytime you can just continue to get better and better at, I'm telling you, we've had a hell of a, or I have personally, I've had a hell of a tough time building some great teams. I'm just, like I've told you before, that's not really my forte, but that's really where I'd like to get some of my weaknesses better. So I think, you know, that's what I tell the kids. I say, you know, here's some places I can help you. Here's some places I can't. And where I can't, you're going to have to do work and legwork and learn these things. And I think that's one area. So, you know.
Well, here's what I think is crazy. And you and I have never talked about this, so you can tell me to shut up if you need to. But I agree. I mean, and I both, you know, manager maybe ain't your best calling, but the network, if you could build a team, if we could build a team, I mean, indeed, with the network you got and the people we know and this stuff, we could really, you know, do some helping people, getting, you know, whatever, getting the right products out of their hands or doing certain things. But you're right. You know, we're a small team putting out information and stuff, and we never really built a sales team around it. And takes a lot
of
time.
Not to be honest, it's just like the cop thing. I don't think I could, Todd. I'll just be honest with you. I don't think I'm the guy. I don't think I could deal with. I'd have to hire an HR person, and I'd have somebody that's in there, you know, just attaboy, hang in there, little Johnny, you know.
Exactly.
And I'm just not that guy, and that's what I'm saying. I probably would never be able to build a big team. Now, I know a lot of people that are great at that, and like I said, I definitely tip my hat to those folks, and I wish I had that skill in me, but I guess I could maybe do it if I really put my mind to it and really had to, but I'm old and I shouldn't say I'm old. I'm old enough and have enough money that I ain't got to do it. And I'm not going to do it.
You don't need to make that trade. You're sitting there.
Yeah, that's probably where I'm at.
You know the horse you ride. So cool.
And I know it's not right, but it's the way it's going to be. So.
Well, sure. One, you did an excellent job on running a monopoly oligarchy anyway. So congratulations to you. Brother, I got nothing. You got anything new to add? Anything that we missed? Any calls you had? Anything? I plumb run out of topics for us. So,
I think, you know, like I said, I think everything's, you know, we've been pretty on track. I think, you know, we haven't had any big swings and misses on anything too bad. Like I said, priced some silver early. Even when all of our friends that were on our calls were saying they were still staying long and buying, I didn't listen. You know, and But that's fine. I respect that. And I'm happy with the profits I made.
Absolutely.
And I got it. So I'm gonna start feathering some more, and you know, just see where we end up on this darn thing. So I think it's fun times. I mean, great to be alive during all this stuff. So nothing. Been piddling with a few auctions. You guys been out to any auctions or anything good lately?
We were last week. We drove to. I mean, you know, keep in mind we're out here. Middle of nowhere, so we're doing consignment auction stuff like that. But yeah, we went to one last weekend in Julesburg, about 40 miles away, and it's good to get out and good to see some great old signs. I mean, two sided porch. I mean, it was cool, but nothing.
You been seeing anything on land? I mean, most of the guys I'm talking to, land staying strong. I mean, several guys have been bidding on things. A couple have gotten them, but paid a lot more than they wanted to, and. A few folks just, you know, prices went too high. So, I'm not seeing much breakage in the land either.
That is staying. I mean, the only place maybe southeast a little bit, here in a little bit, but it's nothing. It is nothing severe. It is nothing like I know. Remember when I told you, got some reports from a guy that I respected, you know, that based on how things were starting here, that we were going to see some land crashes. And, you know, I've always respected what you said, dude. I mean, there's really no way you're going to see a crash because there's buyers sitting there every day. You know,
at this point, at least right now, there is, whether it's in solar and anything or data centers or new developments or shit, you know, whatever on the farm side. But, right, in my opinion, I mean, most of the land sales I've seen, the auctions I've seen go, I mean, price is still too high to pencil. I mean, it's just mostly emotional. Either it's contiguous to their ground, which makes sense, or somebody's just coming in needing to spend the money, or, you know, maybe it's 1031 or maybe it's whatever else. But a lot of the sales I've seen, there certainly hadn't been anything that really penciled.
No, I ain't a single number on the expense line that's going down for production ag that I can see, outside of
No, I
one.
agree, buddy. I agree. So.
The only thing I got to add is, I know I'm going to be talking to Gary here soon. We're going to come up with a little weather story here for the planting season upcoming. So be looking
Yeah.
forward to that. And
And we are still holding out a little bit of hope. And I shouldn't say hope because it's like a recession or a depression, right? They always.
right, I know what you're going to say.
Well, you sit and you hope that you get a weather story, but you sure in hell hope it doesn't happen to you, right? Or one of your friends or
Exactly.
family members.
I
So it's like,
know.
who are you wishing the bad weather on? And I hate being somebody to wish bad weather on anybody. But I know when we talked to Gary last, our weather guru, he was thinking there could be some drought scares pop up into Iowa, Minnesota, Dakotas, things like that come here in the summer. So, I don't know. I mean, if you get the headlines and it doesn't come to fruition, that's probably the best for everybody, right?
Yeah.
That's what we'd probably like to
No,
see.
for sure.
A big drought fear, and then maybe pop some of these shorts out of their position, maybe rally us up. But yeah, that's what I was hoping, Todd. If they got corn down around $4, sub $4 in that 380 area, I'd maybe start being a little buyer, hoping we get some, drought
Well,
headlines,
that was
scares.
my thought. Yeah, that was
Which
my
yes,
thought.
they haven't broke it that much, so here we are. But
No, and it probably won't
we'll
fill
see.
support. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what
Anyhow,
happens.
all right, brother. Well, listen, man, I
All right, my
appreciate your
man.
time and insights today.
All right, talk to you, Todd. See you.
Yeah, bye.